you want to explain it away as something minor instead of having it be, you know, something as serious as a stroke. And, you know, you almost have to force yourself to like, oh, I better go get this checked out because it could be nothing, but it also could be something really serious.
This is TBI, Talking Brain Injury, for Brain Injury Alliance Colorado. I'm your host, Phil Lindemann, a four-time recipient of brain injuries I don't even remember, plus a bunch of kind of sort of do remember. And in this episode, I meet with Flannery O'Neill. She is a public health professional who suffered a stroke when no one expected it, the least of all, her.
We are talking, and then all of a sudden, I had this really loud ringing in my ears, and I was unable to talk completely. I was aware of what was going on, but could not utter one word.
At the time, she was 34 years old, with a recent master's degree and a fierce love of the outdoors.
In the blink of an eye, was in the middle of a stroke in Durango in a very small town.
Now, a few years removed, Flannery shares her story of recovery and the ups, the downs, and other unexpected obstacles. She also explains how it all led to a bright new community.
The stroke community and the brain injury community is just full of the most incredible people who take their experiences and try to improve the world around them.
Today, Flannery leads a support group, and she brings me into the world of advocacy networks. It's Phil Lindemann, your host here at TBI Talking Brain Injury from Brain Injury Alliance Colorado, and we are back, and I'm on Zoom with Flannery. Flannery, it's great to have you here.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Flannery, remind me, where are you from?
I am formerly a Colorado resident, but now living in Louisville, Kentucky.
Louisville, Kentucky. What took you out there?
I was born and raised here and spent a little time in Arizona and then was in Durango and Colorado Springs for about 8 years.
You've been making the rounds, lots of travel.
Yes.
What had you traveling so much? Job related or just kind of wanted to check it all out?
Wanted to check it all out. Like I said, grew up in Kentucky, but wanted to see what else was out there. Lived in Arizona and Phoenix for about 10 years and then decided it was too hot. So wanted to migrate a little north and was lucky to find a job that brought me to Durango for about 7 years before moving over to the Front Range right in the middle of COVID. So did a short stint in Front Range before decided it was time to come back to Kentucky for a little while.
All right. But spent enough time here in Colorado that, what you like about Durango? I've been down there a handful of times and man, it's one of those spots that I just wish I could like spend all my time in.
You know, it's really beautiful. And the community there was just fantastic. And I got to work in the local public health department there. And so I got to see lots of different aspects of the community and how healthcare services are provided in a small town, which was very different from my time being in Phoenix before that, a really different context, and just really loved just the access to the outdoor adventures in Durango, but really, truly the people that I met in Colorado, both in Durango and all across the state were just fantastic. So I miss it dearly, and I come back as often as I can.
Can't wait to have you back here come summertime, especially. I mean, Durango, mm-hmm. The mountain biking, that's what brings me down there. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. And then also the rafting. Me and my wife, we bought a raft, a year or two ago off of a buddy. And man, we've been spending a lot of time out boating. It's like RVing on the river. You can bring everything you want. You don't have to leave anything behind, but it's still just, yeah, it's a blast. Love it.
It is. I was a paddle boarder, and so that was great fun. Being in Durango, you could be done with work, go pump up your paddle board and be on the river so quickly and that it's easy to get spoiled by that.
Yeah, make the town run and then end it all over at Ska, right?
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Oh, man, now you got me jonesing for some river time down in Durango. Got to get on the Los Animas as soon as I can. Now you mentioned, is that your career then, working in medical field?
It is. I have a background in health and public health specifically, and a master's degree in public health, and that is what brought me to Colorado. And then after I experienced my brain injury, I kind of narrowed my focus to working specifically in kind of the brain injury and stroke recovery space.
All right, now let's talk about it. Your experience with brain injury, what happened?
So I actually, right around the corner from SCA, was our the local public health department for Durango, and I was at work had a fairly severe stroke while sitting in a meeting talking with my boss. We were talking, and then all of a sudden I had this really loud ringing in my ears, and I was unable to talk completely. I was aware of what was going on, but could not utter one word. And I could feel my face drooping and sense that on the right side of my body, my arm and leg were, completely useless at that point. I was sitting down, fortunately, but just in the blink of an eye, was in the middle of a stroke in Durango in a very small town.
Listening to you recount that is frightening. What came after?
So fortunately, again, being at the health department, the director of the department is a nurse and immediately knew that something was wrong and was able to get me very quickly to the hospital. Our EMS services were all in that same area. And so they were there very quickly, got me to the hospital, Durango is a very small town. So the hospital was only about a 5-10 minute drive away. So I was at the hospital fairly quickly, but they don't see a ton of stroke and definitely not stroke in a young person. So they were not quite sure how severe my stroke was. So it took a little bit of time and several rounds of tests before it was determined that I needed to have the clot busting medication to resolve the clot that was causing my stroke. And once that happened, so that was probably a couple hours into my stroke, I got that treatment, and then I immediately got sent on a flight up to Littleton, to the hospital in Littleton for observation and further follow-up.
And how old were you at the time?
I was 34 when that happened.
Wow. So yeah, like you said, young, the sort of thing that nobody expects, a stroke
exactly.
In somebody in their early 30s.
Exactly. And, as I went on in my recovery and had, visits with my healthcare team, we realized that I had actually had a TIA, a transient ischemic attack, the week before. So there had been some warning signs. Unfortunately, when I had that TIA the week before, the symptoms had resolved so quickly that I didn't seek out further kind of assessment at the time, and I might have been able to prevent the larger stroke, but hindsight is 20/20, so can't go back and change time, unfortunately. I can only take that forward in my outreach to other people so they don't have the same experience as me.
Absolutely. Explain the symptoms though of TIA.
So a TIA has the exact same signs and symptoms as a stroke, so that would be issues with balance, with eye movement, or your eyes working like they typically do, facial drooping, an issue with your arm or leg, again, moving the way that you're used to it moving, and then speech. So any issues with speech are all the same, whether it is one of those TIAs or a mini stroke is what they're called, or kind of the full blown stroke.
Now, speaking of hindsight being 20/20, looking back, what of those symptoms do you remember, or which ones came and went so fast that you just didn't even think
twice
about it?
So it was speech. It was my ability to use my arm. Those were kind of the main symptoms when I had my TIA. But I had been in the weeks leading up to it. I'd been sick with just an infection, and. So I had some brain fog and just like, I knew something just didn't feel quite right. And so I had a doctor's appointment coming up and I was planning to say, just like something doesn't feel right. Like I just, again, kind of foggy. And instead what that was kind of the leading up to me having my stroke.
Okay. So you were taking the right steps, but it just didn't seem as critical as it ended up being.
Exactly.
Okay.
You know, and I think that the, even in the, after my stroke, there have been a couple of times where I've had some vague symptoms that could be stroke, or, you know, it could be another stroke or it could not be. And the, you want to explain it away as something minor instead of having it be, you know, something as serious as a stroke. And, you know, you almost have to force yourself to like, oh, I better go get this checked out because it could be nothing, but it also could be something really serious. And of course, the faster you get checked out, it just opens up your opportunities for treatment and a faster and more complete, or not more complete, but just a recovery, an easier recovery.
Yeah, of course. Let's talk about your recovery afterwards. So like you said, you were then taken to down to the Front Range. For observation. What kind of stuff was happening there, or how long did you have to spend there?
So I was, you know, I was having some insurance issues just with the type of coverage that I had. So I was in one hospital in Denver, but in the middle of being in the ICU and barely able to speak. My speech was coming back. The medication truly, you know, is miraculous, from being like nonverbal at all to within a couple of hours being able to speak again. It was really incredible to see that. And at the same time, my speech was not totally back to normal, far from it. And the hospital staff is coming in and saying, well, your insurance is only cover. You only have coverage at this facility until you're stabilized. And then you'd have to get moved to now a third hospital. And I really did not want to do that. And I was healthy enough and stable enough that they did let me be discharged from hospital, you know, the second hospital that I was in, the initial one in the Front Range. And so I was got to leave Denver after 2 days, two nights in the hospital, and traveled back home to Durango to do outpatient therapy, you know. But the challenge was, they put you on a plane to get up to the Front Range, but then you have to have someone to drive you home. And that's just, it's a lot, you know, after everything that has happened, then you have to get in a car, you know, drive that 6 hours home. And some of the usual care planning that they do for someone who, you know, lives in Denver and is discharged into the Denver healthcare community, they can get you set up with appointments and get you all ready to go with your therapy. And that just didn't exist, you know, from that transfer from Denver to Durango. And so I had to have people really advocating on my behalf to get me into, you know, to speech therapy, which I desperately needed, and get in to see the neurologist and the cardiologist. And so that took a lot of kind of using all of the contacts that we had. And fortunately, I worked in healthcare, so I was able to leverage some of that to get in for those appointments. But I've heard so many stories of how they just, you know, if you don't have those contacts, you're waiting for a long time.
Yeah. And, you know, I myself, I live in a rural area, rural-ish, I call it. I'm over in the Breckenridge area. So, you know, mountain town, but it's a ski town. So there's lots of amenities, lots of services, but I still hear similar things to you in Durango that, you know, folks, you know, something might not be offered here, or the more common story, it's offered, but it's not covered by their insurance. So they are traveling all over the state, usually down to the Front Range, but sometimes elsewhere, to go get the care that they need, sometimes as much as weekly. And it's just a huge burden, like you said, as somebody's recovering, to have to then go through the travel part of things and figuring out, all right, where can I actually be seen without footing a bill that's going to put me in debt for the rest of my life? Just lots,
you know,
of,
and in the ski town, there's a lot of orthopedic services, but not so much, you know, I had one speech therapy program, you know, was available in Durango. I mean, fortunately, they were there. So I had access to speech therapy and physical therapy and occupational therapy within my town, but there was, you know, there was one option. And, you know, that is, I was lucky that they had openings for me, but I, you know, like you said, that's not always the case.
Yeah, of course. Well, speaking of speech therapy, you sound great. Seems as though, you know, you've recovered everything that you lost during that stroke. But I wanted to talk a little bit more about advocating and getting people to advocate on your behalf. Do you have any advice for folks that are going through maybe something similar as you in a place where, you know, they're having to navigate providers that might be hard to find?
You know, I think it is, you know, I spoke to the value of that community that I feel so connected to the community in Durango and to the people around me that supported me, particularly in my recovery. Again, because I had aphasia, you know, that the language disorder that is frequent after stroke and other brain injury and illness. So I could not advocate for myself. And so I really was reliant on the people around me and my healthcare providers to know, you know, what is it that I needed. And then later on, I was able to kind of speak up and speak for, you know, what my needs were. But sometimes that it requires a lot of kind of the individual with the injury knowing what they need. And I don't think that's right. And so that's why I have spent a lot of time in the advocacy and the building of networks, you know, after my stroke, because there's just so much is expected of the person that is ill. And I don't think that that's the way that it should be.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Building those networks of advocacy. What have you been able to do, or, you know, where are some strides that you made?
So not long after I was back at work, and I was really fortunate to, have this great experience with my speech therapy and my speech therapist. I had an in-person therapist in Durango, but also I used an app called Constant Therapy. It was recommended to me in the hospital in Denver, and I used that in conjunction. It's a speech therapy app, and I used it in conjunction with the in-person speech therapist, and of course talked to them to make sure that they thought that this was a good tool for me. But I think that the combination of both of those things really helped me get back into work and into the things that I wanted to do. But I, you know, it was the emotional side of things that was really troubling, challenging for me, because my speech is mostly better, but I still live with an invisible disability. You know, it is, I can speak fluidly now because I have lived this story, but, if you want me to go give a presentation, I need to practice and prep, and things that just, came really easy to me before, just take a lot more time and energy and physical energy to kind of present in the same way that I did before. And so that was, for me, really hard to get wrap my mind around everything that had changed. You know, I'm basically feel like I'm living in a new body. And so you're learning how to live in this new body. And so what I really was hoping for and looking for was a peer support network. And again, being in a small town, there is not a support group for people who have had a stroke. And I was, I might meet a survivor here or there, but knowing that or thinking my hypothesis was that would be really helpful for me. So I had to create my own support group. So I spoke with my neurologist or told her I was planning to do something like this. And she's like, oh, I have another patient that has been saying the same thing. And so she connected me and together with another survivor, we built a support group. And so that was the first support group that I created. And that group was really meaningful for me just to kind of normalize the experience and know, you know, kind of help me not feel so alone and isolated in this experience. And that was a real kind of turning point in just my emotional and kind of rebuilding after my stroke. And that got me thinking more needs to be done. And it can't just be these one-off approaches. And so I started I changed my working position from the health department to working with the American Heart Association, and they worked specifically on kind of the in-hospital treatment of stroke, and did that for a few years. And now I have had the great fortune to work with a nonprofit organization that is purely focused on making the healthcare system better meet the needs for stroke and brain injury survivors, for the kind of emotional, psychological recovery from stroke, and giving it a level of importance that it is due, that it, in recognizing how important that is to our overall recovery, is that we're caring for the emotional side of these diseases and illnesses.
Incredible work. I love hearing it. That nonprofit network, what's it called?
It's called Stroke Onward.
And where can people find it? Is it kind of like is it based somewhere in particular?
No. So it's a really small, young organization. And we have a small board and a small staff. You can find out more information about what we do at www.strokeonward.org. But we really focus our efforts on ensuring that stroke survivors and their supporters, and stroke and brain injury, and probably many other diseases, because it's not just stroke and brain injury where there's emotional recovery, but this is where our lived experience is, that we have the resources available to us to rebuild our lives to the life that we want to lead, despite whatever changed abilities we might have due to the stroke and to the brain injury. And so that, for us right now, that looks like working with academic partners to build more research in this area and to build out resources for healthcare providers to support their individual patients going through this, and creating, just awareness about these issues.
Just growing that advocacy network. I love the idea of a whole network.
Exactly.
Yeah, great. Yeah, I love it because
we want to change the healthcare system. And so it's we're taking those steps of building awareness and building tools towards our ultimate goal of changing the care system so that it meets our whole needs, like for our whole person recovery.
Now, I've got to ask, before your injury, did you notice some of these disparities or these gaps, as a healthcare professional yourself?
I definitely knew these disparities and gaps, but from a bigger perspective, and I've been working in public health, and a lot of what public health does versus the healthcare system is we look at the community as a whole, like what is what's going on in the overall community, where are there gaps, and then where does it make sense that the healthcare system fills in these gaps versus maybe there's a new policy that's needed or a new program that's needed. So I was aware of disparities from a more macro perspective, and this having this experience really zoomed in for me into a really micro area, although it's micro, but it's not micro. There's many, many, many people having strokes and brain injuries, and there are yet still gaps in care and the system that takes care of us.
Listening to your story, Flannery, just makes me think of right place, right time. Not only like your stroke itself, you happen to have it in front of your boss, who's a nurse, like right place, right time. But the fact that you also have this background with public health and, the inner workings of, actually making change from the inside out, it seems like you're also the right person, right place, right time.
Yeah. It's the winding road of life, right? I never anticipated that, when I undertook a master's in public health, that this is the where it might lead me. But all of these, all these different influences get you to this point. And, certainly I don't wish a stroke on anyone, but I am always astounded when I meet, and not astounded, I mean, I just, the stroke community and the brain injury community is just full of the most incredible people who take their experiences and try to improve the world around them. And so I just feel honored to be part of that movement for improvement.
I love it. And for any listeners, you know, if you haven't had the chance to go back through some of our older episodes, I have talked to a lot of folks who have done this exact same thing, you know, where they've launched support groups, whether it's a digital support group or even, you know, a growing support group down in Pueblo, Colorado, the brain injury support group. You know, they have taken it and ran with it. Lots of, like you said, dedicated people who use their own lived experience, their own trauma, and turned it into a way to help other folks. And as they're helping, they've found that it's helped them back. You know, it's just that, you know, that kind of circle of life sort of thing where, you know, you give back and you get back.
Absolutely. And, you know, just I just love to talk about the value and the role of peer support. I know you mentioned the group in Pueblo. Peer support has just been so valuable for me. And I, you know, I know it's not for everyone, but it is. I've met many, many people that have just really been positively affected by being in community with other survivors. It just really helps to, again, take away some of those feelings of isolation, and to help people understand these new bodies and these symptoms that we have, and, you know, just what it's like to live with a brain injury and with a, with the after effects of stroke. So highly recommend that for everyone. And I run a virtual group now, and there's lots of, it's mostly Colorado, but not all Colorado participants. And that's called Young and Young at Heart. And we meet on the third Thursday of each month on Zoom. And more information for that can be found at youngstrokesupport.org.
Flannery, I love it, all of it. It's, I've personally found a lot of worth from peer support, talking to other people, you know, here in Summit County where I live, but also, you know, through BIAC, Brain Injury Alliance has put me in touch with a lot of, you know, incredible survivors with incredible stories doing the podcast. It's been so much fun. And like I said, in the end, it's helped me, given me new perspective on, you know, some of the challenges I've faced. And that was my last question for you, Flannery, was somebody who might be nervous or maybe resistant to peer support, what advice do you have for them?
I think just give it a try. I was really nervous. I had this inclination that peer support might be something that would be valuable. And my first experience with a support group was a brain injury support group in Durango. And I walked into that room and I immediately felt this sense of belonging that I had been missing. And it was just a warm and welcoming place. And you don't even have to speak and share your story or ask questions, but to just hear other people talking about their experiences just helped me so much in understanding some of the struggles that I was having. So whether that's through a support group or through listening to podcasts, I think that the advantage of podcasts is, or the accessibility of podcasts is phenomenal. And so sometimes when I'm talking to survivors who don't seem like maybe the support group is the right fit, podcasts are a phenomenal way to get, to get some of that same kind of belonging and understanding, from the comfort of wherever you like to listen to your podcasts.
Couldn't agree more. Flannery, and I'll be sure that, in the notes for this podcast, I'll put some links to both of your groups. But one more time, the Stroke Onward and Young Stroke Support. Tell us how to find them.
Yeah, so Stroke Onward, you can find us on social media at Stroke Onward on all your favorite platforms, and also at www.strokeonward.org. And my support group is Young and Young at Heart. And we are available via www.youngstrokesupport.org.
Fantastic. And even though your experiences with stroke, like you said, you're open to anyone who's experienced brain injury, trauma, or maybe even other types
Absolutely.
Of trauma.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, Flannery, I really appreciate you making some time to talk, and incredible story. These days, how you feeling? Like you said, you're getting used to life in your new body, but have you made peace with that new normal?
Yes. It's been about 7 years. So I definitely am at peace. You know, there are ups and downs, and there are days when my language is better and some days where it's a little more challenging, but yes, I'm at peace and still, really very happy that I'm here, that I've recovered, that I had access to the care that I did, and happy to have the opportunity to pay it forward.
Good to have you here on the podcast. It's been TBI Talking Brain Injury from Brain Injury Alliance, Colorado. Flannery, look forward to maybe meeting you in person here sometime soon. Next time I'm in Kentucky.
Wonderful.